Blog Talk Radio.
Well, this is Blog Talk Radio. Good morning, Russ Johnson here, and we are tuning in to another program.
Joining conference now.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
Here we go.
Okay.
Good
he's
morning.
With us.
Of course
okay.
I'm with you. I'm always with you. It's like
all
Jesus,
right.
Huh?
I see. Okay. Good morning. All right. Well, it's exactly at the top of the hour, so we will get started. Let me.
How was your weekend?
Oh, great. What about yours?
Okay. Good. Still here.
Okay. Okay. Do we have Jillian with us this morning?
Yeah. Oh, Jill, of course she's
yes.
With
good
us.
Morning, Nate. Good morning.
Okay. Good. Good morning. Okay. Well, let me mute the call out, and we can go ahead and get started. So hold on just one moment.
Okay.
You have been muted. To unmute yourself, press the star key twice.
Okay, it says that everybody's being muted. Okay, let me unmute. Russ,
okay, can
off.
You, yes, I'm a kid.
Okay,
hear me?
Yeah,
okay,
we can
good.
Hear you.
Good.
All
good,
right.
Good.
Well, we'll go ahead and get started. Today is Monday, and we are featuring a follow-up call from Jillian Green and Russ Johnson, who is a world-renowned radio announcer. He's been in the radio business for many years. And last week, we started a conversation with Jillian Green, which was very interesting. And because of it, we had many requests to bring Russ and Jillian back. So we're going to continue that conversation. Anybody that has any questions, maybe Russ, if you wish, we can start off with questions. We can just kind of proceed from where we left off last Monday.
Uh-huh. Well, basically, we were talking about there's a book out, The Saving Jesus. And basically, I think we had talked about the soul's energy because there's so many things, so many subject matters to discuss. The vastness of the universe, it's going to be baffling to a lot of people in the next 4, 5, or 10, or 20 years, because there's so much information coming to us from the vastness of the universe, which are billions and billions and hundreds of billions of planets, right? We are not the only one in the universe. A lot of people think we are. And some people think the world is still flat, but it's not, you know, according to the scientists. And speaking of scientists, I want to just start out and let Jillian comment from now on the things that are being said. And I'm looking at Neil deGrasse Tyson, if you will. But first, I want to talk to Carl Sagan. Carl Sagan was around. Neil was around. Then you have Stephen Hawkins. I don't know if you remember Stephen Hawkins or not, but he was around. And we will, you know, hear a few words from him. But let's go back to Carl Sagan. He was an American astronaut, planetary scientist, cosmologist, astrophysicist. I mean, he was a science communicator. He was all over the place. He's gone now. But this is what he said before he left us.
Carl Sagan could not have predicted 2021, but he did see it coming. He wrote the following back in 1995, and we quote, "I have a foreboding of an America in my children's or grandchildren's time when the United States is a service and information economy, when nearly all the manufacturing industries have slipped away to other countries, when awesome technological powers are in the hands of a very few, and no one representing the public interest can even grasp the issues, when the people have lost the ability to set their own agendas or knowledgeably question those in authority, when, clutching our crystals and nervously consulting our horoscopes, our critical faculties in decline, unable to distinguish between what feels good and what's true, we slide almost without noticing back into superstition and darkness. The dumbing down of America is most evident in the slow decay of substantive content in the enormously influential media. The 30-second soundbites now down to 10 seconds or less. Lowest common denominator programming, credulous presentations on pseudoscience and superstition, but especially a kind of celebration of ignorance. Roll that around for a while. Those were among his final published words. He died 10 months later. Here we are 25 years later realizing just what he was trying to tell us back then.
And we have Jillian with us. She's from Yorkshire. That's in the UK, England, if you will. And she is in that whole arena of helping us to understand what do we do on this plane called Earth. Right, she's an Anunnaki, and she can talk about that a bit. And she will also talk about, as a clairvoyant, what she sees and what we need to do to save our souls. Jillian, good morning. How are you this morning? Comment on
good
what
morning.
We just heard, if you will.
Oh, I'm very well, thank you, Russell. It's nice to be here again and to be invited back. Corsigan, I liked him very well. He talked in one of his books about when he was writing about the universe, that he believed there was something like hooks holding it together. Of course, this was before there was any real understanding of quantum physics, but that was what he was touching on. For my money, clairvoyant, those hooks that hold the universe together are the hooks of unconditional love. And in the quantum world, unconditional love is like two entangled particles. When any two persons or any two things are joined together and then split apart, that connection between them is never, ever lost. Now I understand, although I know nothing about quantum physics, that this is what is now called quantum entanglement. And I believe this is what Carl Sagan was speaking about when he talked of the hooks that held the universe together. As I say, from my perspective, that is unconditional love. Now, what he was talking about was the material reality. And it took my mind back to Gandhi. When Gandhi was trying to get independence for India, when he was first beginning his work with protests and things, he was approached by a very wealthy man and was told, until you have a newspaper and can spread the word through the print medium, you're not going to get anywhere. Your efforts to free India will go to nothing. I will provide you with a newspaper. Well, in the same way today, we get people like Carl Sagan, who were famous on many levels and who produced written word. Today we have radio and television and all the social media that spreads the word, but in a way it's still like the printed word. You have to have a medium for it. The truth is that people were saying exactly the same thing as Carl Sagan 50 years before that. They've been saying it loud and clear, some people, since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. They could see which way it would go. And the pattern that is now occurring in America, and which Carl Sagan was speaking of, was exactly what happened in the UK after World War II, when the former colonies of the United Kingdom started breaking away, and industry, particularly the copper, the cotton mills, the woolen mills and copper mills, left Britain. There were major strikes all over Britain. There were many, many people, maybe 2 million people out of work. And this is because the industry of cotton, making cotton and wool in the mills, had been moved over to India. And this was really the foothold of Gandhi's work there to free India. So it was Britain's way of trying to keep a hold on them, give them our industry. And now we see where Britain is. They're now in one worse state than America, like Europe is. They don't have enough energy to survive this winter. They're all over Europe. Europe is on the brink of bankruptcy. They are going broke because their businesses are closing down because they don't have enough energy to keep them open. And as the businesses close, that is less money going into the economy. And this is happening in Britain. Households are not going to be able to pay their fuel bills, and there isn't enough fuel to go around to maintain everybody. So that's the next step for us, except that in America, we have the great good fortune to be an energy-rich nation. As a place to be, we have everything that we need for material well-being, so long as we don't have stupid governments that don't allow us to exploit it. If you can't exploit your resources, then of course they're no use to you. You know, oil sitting in the ground is not going to fuel your car. And so we are in a position where it is simply for us in America almost entirely a matter of politics, whether we survive well or we go down with the rest. But right now we're in a pretty bad state worldwide. And we certainly are at the beginning of a global famine. There is massive food shortage ahead of us. I hope everybody's stocking up with supplies for the next year or two ahead of us. Things look pretty grim. And from a clairvoyant point of view, this cannot be necessarily a wholly bad thing, because those who are aware, we really are living in that point where Christ said the parable of the seven wise and seven foolish virgins. That's really where we are today. Are we filling our oil lamps in preparation for the wedding feast? Or are we the foolish ones who are out there with our heads in the sand, not taking care of the necessary things to preserve ourselves? And as a result, when the bridegroom arrives and the feast begins, the door will be shut against us because we won't have the light to see our way into the wedding feast. And remember, the oil lamps are all about light. Are we becoming enlightened? Are we awakening? Are we seeking the truth? Are we beginning to see the truth? And are we moving forward with that truth and taking the necessary steps to adjust our lives accordingly? Or are we simply out there playing the games, you know, the sports, the television, the game shows, the whatever it is that we occupy our time with, and our work, of course, is all of that so consuming to us that we are forgetting to fill our lamps so that we can see our way through the dark days ahead and arrive at the wedding feast? This is the time we're in now. This is the time Carl Sagan was talking about. And believe me, it is not a hopeless time. It is probably the greatest time of opportunity that individuals have had in the last 6,000 years, because this is the time when we really do choose between what is a perpetual lie fed to us through the systems of the planet, the material life here, and what is the truth, which comes to us from spirit. And if we follow the truth, we are just heading into a golden age. But if we stick with the lies, we are going downhill fast.
What is our responsibility as people here on Earth? Now, we recently have been witnessed the soft disclosure of aliens from other planets, you know, the reptilians, the greys, the Nordics, the tall whites, or whomever, Palladians. There are many, many, and we could talk about that. But what is our responsibility? Because rather than concentrating on the big yacht, the Mercedes, the BMW, or the Rolls Royce that we think we want to drive up and down the street with, what do you think our main emphasis and focus should be at this point in time at 2022?
The same focus as it's been for the last 2,500 years since Christ stood up and said, "Be ye perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect." And then he gave simple, direct instructions on what that means and how to do it. And sadly, most of us have not paid that much attention over the last 2,500 years. That's why we're in the terrible mess that a lot of us are in today. But it's never too late. It's never, no matter what point you are at, it is never too late to take that first step. So what does it mean when Christ says, "Be ye perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect"? Well, What it means is getting your life's experience into perfect balance, not too extreme in either direction. For example, if you are an activist in social matters, you know, you have a big social consciousness and you're an activist, say, in something like, you know, the animal kingdom, where you want to prevent cruelty to animals. It's a good thing to stand outside some place that's doing testing on animals with a placard saying, I don't agree with this and you should stop. That's protesting. That's a good thing. Throwing bricks through their window, which is violence by any measure, is never a good thing. Setting fire to their premises is never a good thing. But telling them out loud with your voice as loud as you can get it and holding a placard and yelling at them, this is reasonable protest. So this is what it's talking about when it talks about balance. It doesn't say you can't do any of these things. It simply says that you have to find a happy medium, a way to do it. So everything in your life needs to find that area that is neither too black nor too white. If you like, that gray area in the middle where the two touch one another, but in reality that gray area is a point of nothingness, no color at all. It's neither to the one nor the other. So it's about avoiding extremism. Too much love is as bad as too much hate. When you love somebody too much, it becomes an obsession, and that's unhealthy, right? When you hate somebody, that can become an obsession, and that is equally bad. So it's avoiding extremes, and these are the emotional extremes that drive us, because our emotions affect our mind, our body, and our spirit. We are affected on all levels by our emotions. So the number one job is to learn to get our emotions under control, which is extremely hard. You know, I mean, if I could do everything I talk about, I would be just great, but I can't. I'm just like everybody else. I have the same mental, emotional, and spiritual issues as everybody else has. We're all in the same boat on this planet. And the key is really and truly becoming self-disciplined, taking charge of yourself, taking charge of your own life, so that you can move forward into truth. And that's the key. Always, always be turned to the light. Always be seeking the truth in everything, not just spiritual truth, and not just finding the truth that is in holy books like the Quran or the Bible or the Bhagavad Gita. Don't just look there for truth. Look in every aspect of your life. Is it true that you are getting a fair pay for a fair day's work? Is it true that your boss is treating you well and the workplace is a reasonably fair place? Is it true that you drive with a consideration of other road users? Is it true that you respect your friends and neighbors and you treat people well? Is it true that the medicine the doctor's giving you is actually going to do you any good and not poison you? You know, truth is in everything if we find it. And so seeking truth is a number one job. And how does that benefit us? What do we gain from seeking the truth? Ultimately, what we gain is the ability to make right choices. That when we know the truth of a thing, then we can choose a yes or a no in relation to that thing, whatever it is. Let's say it's a medication that the doctor gives you, and he is telling you, you know, this will help this will help that, but the side effects are da-da-da, like massive side effects as usual. So you take the trouble to research that medicine. You find out what the side effects really will do to your body, and you weigh the pros and cons, and then you make a choice to either take it or not take it. You're not just swallowing it because the doctor tells you to. You are making a considered choice. And when you make a good, careful, considered choice, that's like getting a gold star spiritually speaking, because the whole process of living and evolving as an eternal being is learning the art of making right choices. Every time you make a right choice, you add energy to your own soul. And the more energy you have, the more understanding you develop, the more your understanding expands your vision, your horizons, and the more enlightened you become. So it's like climbing a ladder. You keep going up step by step. And it is all, the whole process is entirely dependent on whether or not you take the trouble to seek out the truth and then make a right choice based on your understanding of that truth. Now, I will say this right up front. Truth itself never changes, but your understanding of it changes constantly. As we grow in knowledge and wisdom, so our understanding expands. So a simple truth that we understood as a child, right? For instance, that at bedtime, the curtains are drawn and it's dark. For us as a child, that's a simple truth. We go to bed, our mum draws the curtains and it's dark. That's true for us. By the time we are adults, we understand the truth is that the sun has set. Right? And if we're a little bit more interested, we understand about the rotation of planets and the solar system, so on and so on. So the truth never changes, but our understanding of it changes constantly. And the better our choices, the more our right choices, the greater our understanding. This is wisdom. This is truth. Right, and this is what allows our soul to grow and expand and lead us into becoming enlightened beings. And as enlightened beings, we don't have a feeling of unconditional love. We become unconditional love. We become fully enlightened beings with no bias at all. And that we call in the Western world, Christ consciousness. What is called in the world of the Quran, I do not know. I don't know their word. I have read the Quran. It's a wonderful book. I don't know what their word is. But our word in the Christian world is Christ consciousness. And what does the word Christ mean? It's the word for light. It's Christos, the light. And so there have been throughout history numerous enlightened beings. The Christos or Christ himself was a special being. He was not only a messenger from heaven, if you like, a great spiritual messenger and leader, but he also had other qualities which had not previously been extant in other messengers. Interestingly enough, for those who do care about these things, Muhammad the Prophet, blessings on him, he came to reiterate the message of Christ. And this is one of the great tragedies of our modern world, that there is such a division between what you might call the Christian world and the Islamic world, with all the fighting and trouble. I am saying to you now, and this is true, the only reason that those fightings and disagreements and murderous thoughts that exist between the Islamic and the Christian peoples of the world is because of their religious teachers. It is not because of the Quran, and it is not because of the Bible. In the Bible, you have in the New Testament the teachings of Christ, and in the Quran, you have the reiterations of that teaching. And the reason that they were reiterated by Muhammad 600 years after Christ was because the churches of the Christian world in 600 years had so distorted the message of Christ that it was and is almost unrecognizable. And indeed, it really is not a Christian message, but a Pauline message, because most of the rules and regulations of the Western churches were written and designed by St. Paul, not by Christ. So, as I say, there is really no difference between in the teachings of Christ between Christianity and the Islamic traditions. Just different ways of saying the same thing, but they are saying the same thing. And they are dependent upon the same sources in the of the higher powers. So that's worth remembering, you know, when we look at our neighbors and our friends, and they are of different religions. I'm only telling you about Islam, but I can say the same is true for the whole world, that Christianity doesn't just belong to Christians. The message of Christ is for the entire human population throughout the whole of this quadrant of the universe, of which Christ is the appointed master. He is the king of this quadrant of the universe. He has been for a very long time. And when he comes back this time, it's going to be a real eye-opener, I think, for a lot of people who discard the traditions and works of other people. You know, they say, this is just us. This is, we are the Christians and everybody else is an exclusion. No human being anywhere in this quadrant of the universe, the whole of planet Earth and other places as well, are subject to the same teachings of Christ. And they are true teachings. And they are also found on this planet in the teachings of Buddha, the seven steps to enlightenment in the Buddhist faith, the seven pillars of wisdom in Buddhism. These are the foundational teachings of the teachings of Christ. Christ in his young days, in his early 20s, went to the Far East and studied with the great masters in Tibet and brought those teachings back and turned them into parables suitable for his own people. But if we were able in this day and age, poor Tibet has been overtaken by China, of course, and I have no doubt that a great deal of their archives have been destroyed. But if we were able to read those most ancient scrolls of several thousand years before Christ, we would see that the teachings were there originally in those scrolls. And if we are to look at the teachings of the Essenes in the desert, at the time of Christ and before, the teachings of the Essenes are the same teachings. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. Work on yourself. Be yourself. Physician, heal thyself. Look into yourself. Look into your own heart. Don't look outside. It's all within you, which comes to the crunch point, which is basically your salvation is a do-it-yourself program. And the first step is getting charge of your physical self and your own emotional state, correcting your own character and seeking always to find the truth in everything.
So you said before that Jesus said to us, all the things I have done, you can do and more. Whether it be whatever things that I've walked on water, change water to wine, raise the dead, whatever I have done, you can do it more. That's in John 14:12. Could you explain that a wee bit more for us?
Yes, it's actually, he tells us that three times, not just the one time, but three times he tells us the same thing. And it's exactly what I've been talking about. If we can comprehend the idea, and I'm sure we all can, that everything that exists is in motion. Everything is a vibrating, changing frequency, right? Everything is moving. Every cell in your body is changing constantly. Everything in the universe is in constant motion. There is no such thing as standing still. If it's still, it's dead, right? So all life is constantly in motion and it's constantly changing. And this is what Christ was demonstrating to us over and over again, that if you change the frequency, you alter the substance at subatomic level, quantum level, if you like, you change the frequency, and that changes the nature of the substance. So, for example, every human, essentially, we all have a self-maintaining, self-healing body. Believe it or not, we are all actually capable of correcting 99% of the diseases in our body. Now, I'm going to give a little exception to that, that I'll set aside because there is an exception, but we were designed to be self-healing, perpetuating mechanisms with a lifespan of up to 800, 1,000 years. Right? That was our original design. And what we have in the palms of our hands and the soles of our feet are like little energy wheels. And it is through the soles of our feet that we can ground out negative energy from our bodies. And I will just quickly sidetrack and tell you how to do this. If you stand in the shower with the water running down over you, you know, after you've done your showering, just stand there for a minute. And this is what you think. You accept that water and electricity have a chemical, a relationship. There is a relationship between water and electricity. The water can ground out the electricity. So while you're standing there and the water is running over you, think about clearing negative energy. Your physical body is a bioelectrical chemical body with an electrical field all around it. Today, by balancing that field, remember I was talking about perfection, road to perfection is about balance. So balance your own field and let that water take that energy out through the soles of your feet and get rid of any negativity in your heart or your mind that you woke up with in the morning. Ground it all out through the shower and let it flow away. That takes care of disturbed energy every day for you, and it's easy to do. 2 minutes, less than that, a minute. You just have to put your mind on it, and it's done, right? So that's one thing. The other thing are the little wheels in your hand. These are where energy flows out from your body into whatever you put it into. Healers put their hands on. We're all familiar with laying on of hands. They are pulling the energy of the universe, the God-given life force that exists in the air around us. You pull it in through the top of your head. You let it flow down through you and out through your hands. That's how you pull healing energy to give to other people, if indeed healing is your business and you are a healer. If you're not a healer, please don't do it, because you might feel it's a kindness to somebody to try and help them, but if you really don't know what you're doing, you might just be dumping a lot of other rubbish that belongs to you on somebody else. So I hope you won't do it unless you really know what you're doing. But that's how hands-on healing works. And we can use this ability to pull that energy in into our bodies, down through into our solar plexus, to heal ourselves. And this is what Christ was doing when he turned water to wine. He put his hands over the wine and blessed it. A blessing is when somebody pulls the life-giving force from the Creator out of the atmosphere, flows it through themselves as a clean and pure vessel, and passes it out through their hands. That is the flow of pure, life-giving, perfectly balanced, unconditional love passing through. Christ passes it through when blessing the wine, and that changed the wine at the Last Supper into the same frequency as his Cana. It turned the water into the same frequency as wine. and the frequency of everything determines what that thing is. In your body, for example, you have a specific frequency that is the vibrating rate of the cells in your liver. You have a specific frequency that vibrates at the rate of your pancreas and your kidneys and your organs and every part of your body. Every cell of your body is what it is as a cell because of the rate at which it is vibrating, because of its frequency. And so when Christ said, everything I can do, you can do and more, he was teaching us that when we master ourselves and our bodies, we ourselves vibrating at the same frequency as the body of Christ vibrated. And when we are vibrating on that frequency, then we will have all the skills that he had. Now, this is simply a matter of reality. This is not some magical airy-fairy something. For example, I am a clairvoyant. That does not make me any more or less human than anybody else. What it does mean is that sometime through lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, I learned the skill of moving myself into a frequency which lets me view things in the ultraviolet frequency, which is fairly limitless. Certainly, I can see into this, across this planet, or into the place where the departed people go. I can see a long way. As a clairvoyant, I can see a long way because I'm looking in the ultraviolet frequency, which our normal eyesight does not look at. Right? So what I'm trying to explain to you is that these things are not some magical gift that we have to for and hope somebody gives to us. We can certainly ask to be made worthy to receive those gifts. But when we ask those things, when we say those prayers, the response from Spirit, if we could hear it, would be, by all means, make yourself worthy. And that is a matter of discipline. Self-discipline. I'll tell you a little story about me. This happened years and years ago. I had a visitation from two very highly evolved beings who were giving me a lecture on the universe, right, and light. And they had started out explaining that, you know, we could think of the universe as the diastole of the source, and that he breathed out this from I did, and a whole kind of scenario about this. And it was getting pretty scientific, and I was scribbling down as fast as I could what they were telling me so I wouldn't forget it. And after about 20 minutes, suddenly in the middle of a sentence, they stopped speaking to me. And I looked up at them and I said, why have you stopped? And they said to me, you are losing mental discipline. You are not absorbing what we are telling you. We are not going to waste time telling you anymore. And they left. Basically, they said, before they left, they said, we'll come back when you're more focused. And they left. In other words, if I only know a portion of the secrets of the universe, it's because I wasn't disciplined enough to hold that mental attention. What happens to us, what we are capable of understanding, how we understand it, and the gifts that we develop by developing frequencies is entirely up to us. It is not magic, and it is not for nothing. We have to work very hard to achieve it. But the work itself is simple, and the steps and processes are simple. For example, the great foundation of all this soul evolution leading to our immortality is a process of detachment from this world. Now, Russell mentioned earlier about people striving to get bigger houses, bigger cars, you know, Rolls Royce and so on and so forth, striving for more material goods constantly, striving for, I don't know, facelifts or vacations, whatever it is they are aiming for. Excuse me. The smoke's getting to me. I apologize. But the secret is not to do without things in a life. There's no reason why everyone can't have an abundance of everything.
Well, take a drink of water. Listen.
Right.
So
yes,
you're
I did
saying...
take a drink of water. I'm sorry. No, well, let me finish this thought, please, Russell.
Okay.
The thing is that the key is to become detached, to learn the art of non-attachment to the material things of this world. And so I'm going to make a little suggestion to you that's a real simple thing to do. If you are a lady listening to this and you use in your home, say, a vacuum sweeper or better still, a dishwasher, right, or a hair curler, any of those things, anything that you use on a regular basis, put that item away, shut it down, and don't use it for a whole week. And see the process that you go through by doing without that useful thing for a whole week. Because it is surprising the things that we are attached to without understanding what attachment means. For instance, if you stop using the dishwasher for a week, the first day or two, you're going to find yourself, you know, with a sink full of dirty dishes and, oh, I haven't got time. I'll do it later. By the end of the week, you're washing dishes without even thinking about it. In other words, get to that stage where the things that you use are no longer essential, necessary attachments in your mind, where they are something that is useful to have and you're glad you've got it, but you can do without it. And in that way, we learn to get a perspective on what we need in our lives as opposed to what we want in our lives. And once we clear those lists, once we find that we want nothing and that we actually need very little, at that point in time, we are free of dependence and therefore we are free to make use of everything. And that's a very simple process. You could master that within a week or two, but it's a huge step forward in your spiritual evolution. Okay, Russell, I'm sorry I interrupted you there.
No. All I was just commenting on the fact that you did talk about frequency, and I was saying that the people on the line and other people understand that Royal Rife and Tesla, they talked about frequency medicine, that this is the answer to excellent health rather than depending on Big Pharma. So that's what I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true.
Play one other click. I'm going to turn it back over to Nate because he might have some other way he wants to go. But I just want to say that when we study the universe and we commit ourselves to become a student of life, a student of improving ourselves and helping others to improve. And the Bible says, study to make thyself approve to yourself and to others in terms of getting information and making it happen. Because when you get that information, that's the beginning of wealth, right? The knowledge itself is not, but the utilization of knowledge in the right place, right time, under the right circumstances is the magic to extreme wealth. And I just close by saying that Stephen Hawking, another scientist who left us just a few days ago, if you will, and he has a motion picture, if you don't know his whole history, is that theory of everything that you should view, take in, and ingest, if you will. Hawking was born in Oxford into a family of physicians. In October of 1959, at the age of 17, he began his university education at Oxford, and he says this before he left.
Realized, while there is life, there is hope. There are many ambitious experiments planned for the future. We will map the positions of billions of galaxies, and we will better understand our place in the universe. But we must also continue to go into space for the future of humanity. I don't think we will survive another 1,000 years without escaping beyond our fragile planet. It has been a glorious time to be alive, doing research in theoretical physics. The fact that we humans, who are ourselves mere collections of fundamental particles of nature, have been able to come this close to an understanding of the laws governing us and our universe, is a great triumph, and I'm happy if I have made a small contribution. I want to share my excitement and enthusiasm about this quest. So remember to look up at the stars and not down at your feet. Try to make sense of what you see and wonder about what makes the universe exist. Be curious. And however difficult life may seem, there is always something you can do and succeed at. It matters that you don't just give up. While there is life, there is hope.
While there is life, there is hope. And maybe you might want to comment on that as you back over to Neil.
I really like a lot of what Stephen Hawking said, and he does have videos. There are videos of some of his lectures which are very interesting. I don't agree with everything, all his conclusions, but he was a fantastic person. He was horribly diseased, and you heard the sound of his voice. He was actually speaking through a sound box because he'd lost all control of his own muscles. So he was a remarkable man and a mathematician, primarily a mathematician, and I love numbers. So I'm very, very fond of him. I think the most important thing he said was right at the end when he said, don't look down at your feet, look up at the stars. And that is so important for all of us. Always, always be looking to the light in everything in your life. Look to the light and leave any darkness behind you, because darkness serves you nothing. And that is all the dark thoughts. You know, when we have people do things against us and we have nasty thoughts of, revenge or anger or whatever, those kind of thoughts only hurt us. They don't hurt the other people at all. They don't care if we hate them or we don't. But that hatred actually damages us both physically, mentally, and spiritually. So always leave any darkness behind you and always be looking at the stars, looking to the light. And our great star, of course, is the sun in the solar system. So look to the sun.
Well, I appreciate you being here. I understand that you didn't feel that great this morning.
No, I'm fine.
Okay. Okay. But I'll turn it back over to Nate. Nate, I'll turn it back.
Okay. I'm here. Okay. Thank you, Russ. Thank you, Jillian. I see we already have someone unmuted that perhaps had a question. Nora Johnson, go ahead.
Oh, I want to comment how wonderful the conversation, and I don't know the lady's name, but I think we're in the same age bracket, because it seems many of what she says is what I have experienced in these decades. I think she was alluding to the last piece that she alluded to about the let go, let God. And people of color are so gifted. But we've been talked at and talked to and things held from us. So metaphysics is something that is there, but basically I have about 36 Muslims in my family, Jehovah's Witnesses and Christians, and if you put her on with any of them, they would hang up because they would not be open to it, because it would not be part of their tradition. And what we're saying now is, they used to say, if you want to hide something from people, put it in writing. So therefore, if you don't read and you didn't read those 5 books and you only stay with one, then we're sort of geared to only see things out of one eye. And I think what is being said here is we're seeing out of 2 eyes and the 3rd eye. But when you mentioned about the let go, let God, I think that is what COVID has done. We are relearning, unlearning, relearning. And what I got in conclusion is not understanding, we're understanding. We're out from under. We're in. From the book said, when I was a child, I thought as a child. And you can't, when you're a childlike, you can't take in this information because you have no place to put it. You're only eating baby food and pablum. And in order for you to take in all the different things from Christian Science to everything, I'm 81, so I was born in New York City. So anything that you can think of, from Malcolm on the Corner to the Village to Judaism to Buddhism, and when you were a seeker, you got it. But now you have to understand it, not understand it. Even yesterday, the question came up in the Bible as how could Aaron take a wife? There was nobody there but Adam and Eve and the family. So where did the other tribes come from? And my son asked that, so we had to look it up. Then someone threw something at me yesterday about Lilith. And for all of my life, I never heard of Lilith. And that was the person who was supposed to have been before Eve. So we're constantly learning. But here's the inner part. If we overextend ourselves, I know people who've read 2,000 books at the end of their life that didn't believe in nothing because they got sidetracked. My take is that you have to have a foundation. There are some people who still believe that Christ is not here. I believe it's consciousness. I don't believe it's a body. You know, it's the consciousness. And when all the people that I've, all the books I've studied, every single one of them mentioned the Christ. Whether they believe he came or he didn't come, they knew, the wise ones know, that the prophets came and they all supported one another. But that Old Testament was really important because for people of color, they gave us the New Testament. And if we had really looked at that Old Testament, it was a foundation. You would never have eaten pork. You've never eaten half of the food that we eat, and people wouldn't be sick. And the other thing that you talked about, everybody, this is a body, like a car. And no matter how wise you are, at some point, nobody mentioned karma. And you couldn't say karma to a lot of people. They would want to shoot you in the head. That this life is a continuous. Our souls have been moving. We've been everybody. We've been a little bit of everybody. And I do thank God for this little brown that he put on us, because there's a lot of things that are inherent in us that we didn't know. There were a lot of things inherent in us that they didn't teach us. So if you are a seeker and a traveler, then you would get it. But I want to compliment the two of you for the session that you gave today, because it was pretty profound. But if people aren't, you know, it's like our sister – she's a book. When she talks, you just keep turning the page because she's a writer. But if you are in the beginning, I've had meditation, and I've been meditating for 50 years. I couldn't even mention meditation and yoga to people. They may come and shoot me in the family. So much of this metaphysics, we had to hold under a thing and just, you know, and not kind of hide, but kind of store it like a bank account. And now, with the 5G phone, I agree. We have to all come up to energy and frequency. We have, all of us are being pulled up to the energy that's on the planet, meaning you have to watch your diet. And what you said before about let go, let God, and Christ's teaching said, pick up your cross and follow me, forsaking all others. So what you said about that, about the washing machine and the dishes, yes, we do. We need to let go. And that is the hardest thing to do for people, to let go, because everybody is busy, and that's all they know. I wrote an acronym for busy, okay? And then the Quran said, how does that thing go about if you put anything before God, don't put anything before him. So all the books kind of said it, but people don't listen. And one of the reasons that the ministers are so big today is because we don't read, and everybody says, Pastor said, Pastor said this and Pastor said that, because we don't read. So I'm sorry, but I just was responding because it was a wonderful conversation. And I think I wish it could be more people to hear it, but we are not going like that. We're going in small groups. We're not going know, you should know the truth and the truth will set you free. And my last comment, when Christ had 12 disciples, Mary, Martha, and Miriam were there for him. Most of the disciples didn't even know what he was talking about. But I always have disrespect for men. I do. And I knew that if he wanted us to be, he would have said he had 15 disciples. He would have put Mary, Martha, and Miriam in there. But he said 12, and he made men. And that's that balance between us these days. It's that Adam, Eve, or the, you know, the masculine and the feminine. And when you put this together, it's magic. So the day we have the masculine and the feminine. Thank you so much for hearing me.
Can I just say that one thing that makes me smile is knowing that she's going to go back and she's going to be with her husband.
Okay. Okay. Someone asked them. Okay.
Right.
Oh, we've got a few people unmuted. Did you want to say something else, Jillian, before we comment?
I was just going to give one little comment.
Okay, go ahead.
I liked what that lady was saying. Absolutely, I liked what she was saying. Right, and I like the idea of inner standing rather than understanding. But I would expand on that from my perspective. All the understanding that we arrive at from our experiences on this planet does actually give us a platform.
Okay, I'm sorry. Somebody keeps unmuting and they have background noise. So I muted. Go ahead.
Understanding, from my perspective, is building a platform to stand on to reach for something much greater than this kind of life experience. So I'm, for myself personally, I'm going to stick with understanding, but I did like her idea of inner standing. And I would also just like to throw something else out. When Christ appointed 12 disciples, there was a very specific reason for this. And this may be even less acceptable to other people than the ones that she was commenting on. But it is my contention that Christ came down from the Anunnaki, and that the Anunnaki Council is numbered in 12. There are always 12 members sitting on the inner council. There are 12 men, but there are also 12 women and the leader at the top. So every 12 of men has an equally respected number of women. And it was St. Paul who excluded women from the church, not Christ. And it was St. Paul who excluded the women who followed Christ and who were his true disciples, along with the men, from actually going out and being teachers, although his one we knew as his mother, the Madonna, was always alongside Christ and teaching with him and on his behalf. And St. Paul simply cut that out. He didn't want women involved. So,
and I totally agree with that. We should all be ruling ourselves.
Yes.
Okay.
We should.
We also have Dora. Go ahead, Dora.
Good morning, Jillian. Good morning, everyone. And good morning to the lady that spoke. That was a profound sharing of information. I can relate to her because I have family members who are Jehovah's Witnesses and I was born into a family that had a matriarch in our family who was a witness when I was born and throughout my life. So I understand what she's saying, but you know, to me, that's why there's prayer. You can pray for people that you're in, especially when you're in their presence, and you can ask for the proper answer, the proper information, and let God do that, and let our Father, the Creator, the universe, take over, and let them know that you're opening that door in your presence for information. There's somebody with a lot of noise back there. I invited someone to Jillian. That was profound what you shared with us today, and I just did that in the shower that you said, and it just seemed like I'm absorbing the information so much better now that my concentration is fully on this call right now, and it's a whole different feeling than when I started. But I invited someone on the call, and I'm sure that what you said really helped them. They're going through some emotional and some medical, physical changes right now. I'll just leave it like that, and I'm praying that they're on the call and that they heard your sharing and that they receive it. And I just kind of got off from what the young lady shared because she shared a lot of the things. But the one thing that I feel about, she asked a question about Cain going off to the land of Nod, and there he found his wife. That's always been a question in my mind over many years. Well, I know now that I'm with this group and that I've done more reading, and through reading I found that there were more than just Adam, Eve, Cain, and Abel on this planet. So that's where he found his wife.
Yes.
Correct?
The planet was full of people. you know something, Dora? The name Adam is the Ad-Am, right? The generic name of word that the Anunnaki use to describe mankind in general. And in that context, they mean the male of the human species on planet Earth. And the Ad-Am, or the Adam, was the first one successfully genetically altered by the Anunnaki many, many thousands of years ago. And the Ad-Appa was the educated Adam who was given rulership on this planet roughly 6,000 years ago. So you're absolutely right. The planet had a lot of people, several millions of people, Cro-Magnon, Neanderthal, pre-Adamites, all over this planet before the Anunnaki took one of them and genetically altered them, creating what we know as the modern Homo sapiens, or the first Adam. And the first Adam that we really know about beyond Genesis is Ad-Appa, the one called Ad-Appa. And he was the one, you know, who had Eve and so on and so forth, the development of Eve. So this is all about the history of the genetic engineering of humans indigenous to planet Earth. So, yeah, you're quite right. You don't have to worry about the money being one person. The planet will
okay.
be humans.
Mic check. We're going over, Nate, so let them have any comments. Just 2 minutes, please.
Okay.
Hello?
Okay, Janet, would you hold? You have a lot of background noise, and every time you unmute, all that background noise comes in. So once you get rid of the background noise, maybe you can unmute. But in the meantime, we got a couple of other people. But once I see you unmute without the background noise, you can come back in. Okay, we have Bernetta that's been holding.
Yes, good evening. Jillian, we have...
Yes, Bernetta.
We've been told that 99% of the resources are controlled by 1% of the people. Now, a lot of us on this call have read books like Course in Miracles, The Disappearance of the Universe, and all of it comes down to forgiveness. And when we see chemtrails falling on us every day and all of these things that we see are aimed at destroying our vibrant, beautiful spirits, you know, that forgiveness, how do people really get that in their mind, body, and spirit when you see the reality?
It's, you know, is that your question? How do they forgive? It's really, really simple when you realize that you never forgive the actions. You only forgive the person who is perpetuating them because they don't know any better, right? So you don't forgive somebody dropping things on your head that are damaging you. You don't forgive wicked orders of government that demand you put poisons into your body. You don't forgive foreign enemies dropping bombs on your cities. These are unforgivable inhumanities of man to man. What you do forgive is the people who perpetuated those actions against you because they don't know what they are doing. And that is the forgiveness that actually Christ taught on the cross. Didn't he say, you know, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do, right? That's why we forgive. It would be an idiocy, a plain stupidity, if somebody came into your home and smashed everything that you owned and then set it on fire. And then you turn around and say, oh, I forgive that, right? You're never going to excuse that kind of behavior, I hope. But what you are going to do is forgive the person, the living soul manifested in the person who did that. So you do not forgive the drunk who is a drunk driver and runs you over in the street. You don't forgive the drunk driving, but you forgive the soul of the person who did it because something's going on with that person and they're doing bad things. They do not truly realize what they're doing. And so it's just a matter of real common sense. And once you understand that, you don't forgive the action, you forgive the person. And you forgive the eternal person because they don't know what they are doing. Because when people know what they are doing in their lives, when they are, in other words, coming from soul level and spirit, they will never be doing bad things. If we were all perfect at soul level, we would never do a bad thing to another person, would we? We just wouldn't. So when bad things are done to us, we don't forgive the bad things because they're bad. Why would we ever forgive badness? We decry badness. We denounce badness. We denounce all evil, right? And any level of badness is a form or manifestation, great or small, of some evil, some going against the rules of God, some going against what is right. That is a manifestation of evil on some level. And we're never going to forgive evil. When we say the Lord's Prayer, we ask to be saved from it, protected from it, not ask to forgive it. But we forgive the person who is perpetrating it against us because they do not know better. And that's the only reason we do it, ever. That is forgiveness.
Okay.
Does that make sense to you, Bonetta?
Okay, well, she's muted at this point. We are well over time, and we've got a couple other people that were unmuted. So the other two people that are unmuted, I'm going to call on you, but try to make your comments or your questions short because, like I said, we are over time. So, Janet, you've been unmuting, but you have a lot of background noise, so I see you don't have the background noise now, so go ahead. But make it short, please.
Okay, thank you. I was just going to say, all of us need wisdom, but not only do we need wisdom, but we need to know how to use the wisdom, because wisdom is given to us liberally if we ask for it. And my husband and I have been studying Proverbs and Psalms now. Well, we committed to 30 days, but we've done the 30 days, but we're still studying wisdom to have, and we can have it, but we just got to know how to use it. Thank you for listening.
Okay, thank you, Janet. Okay, and last caller is Aisha. Go ahead, Aisha.
Yeah, I think it was a beautiful call. I think the meetings of the mind, body, and spirit was on this call. I believe that it's not so much all the differences in all the books. I believe that what it is what are the similarities. And even though some people believe in past lives, you know, reincarnation and things of that nature, the fact that you came here and what it is that you were here to learn and what was it here, we here to teach. And so I learned the wisdom, knowledge, and the understanding of the masters that are entangled on this call. And I'm glad that we're here to respect one another's time, patience, experience. And I just want to thank, you know, all the people that's on this call, because we're on this call together for a reason, you know, some by choice, some by, you know, let me drag you across this to listen to something new. But for sure, too, Julie, you are very precious. You connect the dots. And, you know, Nate, thank you for the call, because my closed mind itself would say, you know, who am I not to learn, and who am I not to listen, and what is it that I need to learn about my upbringing and my connection to my impact in society. So thank you all. It's been a fantastic call, and, you know, let's share the knowledge here from another day.
Okay, thank you, Aisha. Okay, I just want to bring out one thing and ask a question, but it's probably more of a comment. I know in reading one of the versions of thing was the Bible that said when the children of God met the daughters of men. So through that implication, it also implies, based on something Jillian mentioned earlier, that there were other people here besides Adam and Eve. So Jillian, as you go out, you want to comment on that, and then we'll end the call.
Oh, yes, it's perfectly true. Once the genetic engineering had been done on the indigenous human species, and it was a woman out of East Africa who began the modern human race, it was her ova that were taken and fertilized to bring about Homo sapiens. Once that genetic engineering was done and the genetic code was spread among the existing humans, you got the beginnings of the Sumerian development in the Middle East. And the humans began reproducing among themselves. And when that happened, the beings on the planet, the Anunnaki, who were still living on the planet at that time, found the women very beautiful. Enki, the chief scientist who had done the original genetic engineering, found them incredibly beautiful, as did his son Marduk. And they both had relationships and produced families with the daughters of men, with ordinary Earth humans, and were so enraptured with them that a long, long time later, and many generations of humans by that time, Marduk actually took a wife and had a family and refused to return home to his own planet, because he loved his Earth family and the humans here so much that he wanted to stay with them. And so, yes, what it tells you about them finding the daughters of men fair is absolutely true. They did and still do.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Russ, do you have any closing comments?
No, I appreciate the time that you have given us. And if I were to take 10 seconds, I'll let George Green, who was married to Jillian Green, if you ever want to see who he was, you can go, you know, to YouTube and George Green UFOs, and he'll come up. The other thing, you can always go to his website that he left. That's nohoax.net, nohoax.net. 15 seconds.
And don't look for anybody out here to save you other than yourself. You know, even Christ said that. He said, what I do, you can do and greater, and what you sow, you shall reap.
Thank you, Nate. I appreciate the time.
Okay, well, thank you guys very much for being here, and I'm already getting texts asking you can come back. So, okay, I will get with you on that, and we will announce it, and hopefully you guys can come back, because it's always a very interesting conversation. So thank you so much, and thank everyone for being here. And we look forward to seeing you tomorrow. So have a great day, and thank you again.
Okay, but thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
The organizer has ended this meeting. Goodbye.
So, thanks, Julian. Thanks for being here. You did a magnificent
job.
Yes, it was
a pleasure, as usual, Russell.
You did a great job.
I enjoyed it. I thought there was one interesting little thing that a lady that had called in, and she made the comment about, you know, the importance of listening to spirit. and it made me smile, because soon after that, Russell said, you know, keep your comments short. Well, the truth is, if I wasn't listening to spirit, I wouldn't have anything at all to say, because when we start these shows, as I think you know, I have no idea what we're going to talk about, and neither do I know the answers. I just have to hope that spirit is open to me seeing these or hearing or knowing these answers in some way, because that's where any information I have comes from, is directly from spirit. And I thought the other comment that was, and of course the idea that you can cut short spirit is an oxymoron, because spirit is endless. I just can't. The reason it cuts off at all is because I have to draw breath somewhere. So that was kind of made me smile. But the same lady also did make the comment about the amount of reading people do, and that they read all these different books. And, you know, two things happened to me in my life that were the single most important things I ever experienced, spiritually speaking. One was when a dear friend, Edna May, who was a famous clairvoyant in England, and a dear, dear friend of mine, she said to me one day, you know, Jillian, you need to stop reading, because, and I was always an avid reader. I read everything from Agatha Christie to J.K. Chesterton, you know, I mean, right across the gamut of literature. And she said, you need to stop reading, because it is only when you digest what you already know that you can be open to spirit. Well, soon after that, I went to live in Indonesia. And for the first 3.5 years that I was there, I had literally no access to any reading, because everything local was in the Indonesian language, which I was not by any means fluent in. And there was no access for English books. You couldn't get anything unless occasionally somebody brought you something from Singapore, you know, passing through, and they left behind a paperback or something. So for 3.5 years, I did not read. And in those 3.5 years, I received as much or more spiritual enlightenment as I received in any 20-year period of my life otherwise. And it was because of the silence that I was able to develop in my head. In other words, when we learn something, we have to have time to digest it. And if it is something we are learning from spirit, that can take a long time. So it is advisable that we don't always be filling our heads with unnecessary things, even things that we need to learn, that we need to give our brains time to process, and the cells of our body time to absorb the instructions that we're receiving. And that lady touched upon that today, and I thought, yes, that's a very important thing that we all need to realize.
Right. So, yeah, no, I thought it was good. Now, we stayed the course, and somebody got something out of it. There's no question about that, because we are talking and speaking the truth. So what can we say?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And as always, it is everybody's choice, free choice.
Yep.
You know, they were talking about having friends and family members who were of different faiths, different religious backgrounds, and that they couldn't talk to them about the certain things. You know, one lady said, you know, if we introduced them to this particular radio show, they'd say we were crazy and hang up, right? But we're coming back to that same thing. It is our own choice. And if we choose to put blinkers on our eyes and close our ears, well, that is our choice. And that is retarding our growth in any area of life, not just in the spiritual world, but in any area, if we are not open to new thoughts and new ideas ever, then we are restricting. We're putting ourselves in a box. And if we want to be in a box, that's our choice, right? It is always everything that there is in this life, out of this life, on or off the planet, it is entirely dependent upon our individual choices, always.
Right, right. Absolutely. Okay. Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you very much for being here this morning. I'm certainly sure they really enjoyed it. As he indicated, he's getting requests now for you to come back again. So what can I say?
Yes, well, we'll see about that. We'll talk about that.
Okay.
You know, when you get asked things, I was saying to Spirit some months ago, you know, my dear George has been gone 3 years now, and I'm very lonely without him. I miss him so much. He was a larger-than-life person, and he filled the space around us. You know, he really did. So he is very, very much missed on a daily basis. And I was saying to the guys earlier this year, look, I'm not going to stay on this planet if George is gone and I'm not working. I haven't worked. I retired when I was 74, and I haven't really worked since. So I said, if I don't have something work to do, then I'm leaving. This is a couple of years ago, because it was right after that. I mean, within less than 2 weeks, that you, Russell, first called me and said, will you come on the radio show and talk about these things? And so for me, this is work. This is the work that I do, right? And basically teaching what I know and passing it on to other people. And it is very important to me. I get as much or more out of it than anybody listening does, I am sure, because it's the old story. When we need to learn, we teach, right? And so for me, these opportunities to talk about the things I know in connection with Spirit are teaching sessions in which I am learning. Now, I hope somebody else is learning something from it as well, right? I hope somebody else gets something out of it. But I want you to know, Russell, that it is a great opportunity and privilege for me to be able to learn in this way for myself. And so I'm very thankful and grateful for it. And I appreciate it.
Oh, no, we need that. We need another voice. We need another focal point. I mean, those guys, they know each other and they're working with each other. But I think that if we get somebody else to come in and with a new slight twist on things, I think it enhances our development. It just opens us up a little bit more. So that's the key.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I agree.
So I really want to do at some point, doesn't have to be today, obviously, but at some point I want to do an hour just on George, what he did, his history, what he believed, what he could have done differently, whatever. I think that would be a good program, don't you think? To leave for people to listen to. Yes? Because most people don't know George.
They might like to listen to George. They might like to listen to George. They might like to listen to George, you know, the clips of George. And yes, I think it would be interesting to talk about George. Mm.
I mean, he spent 40 years out there doing this stuff, right? Going, traveling all over the world, going to conferences, USO, being on radio and television, and then, you know, loved the stage. He loved being out in front to deliver a message that he thought were the messages, if you will, that were coming from the Palladians or whomever, right? The people who wanted us to be
better people. Right.
He loved that.
Yes.
He took that on
graciously.
He was
a true Leo. My George was a true Leo. He absolutely he was a true Leo. He was like the sun. He was a shining person. He was also interestingly enough, for a Leo, one of the humblest people I've ever known.
Wow.
The thing I most respected about George was that he put himself out there. He had no personal ego about it, none whatsoever. He really was not egotistical. And he put his money where his mouth was,
yeah.
Which is not true of so many people out there telling us all how we should live. It's surprising how many of the spiritual leaders of our time require some form of monetary reward pouring in, whether it's pastors demanding their congregations build them big churches or hand over money to them for their well-being and their keep, or whether it's the bit more spiritually evolved who say, well, I want to create an enlightenment center and a wellness center, and I just need somebody to tell me how to win the lottery or give me $1 million so I can open this center for spiritual development, right? That always makes me smile. How many people are doing that out there and they believe they're being spiritually enlightened in the process of doing it? My darling George, in the beginning of his venture with the Pleiadians, was working 10, 12 hours a day developing his business to bookkeeping, of publishing, to make money, and using that money then to spread the message of enlightenment, if you like, and well-being and living on this planet. He used his own money to fund his work. He didn't ever ask any other people for money to fund his work. And when he began with the Pleiadians, he even, because he believed in those Pleiadians and the books they gave him, he believed implicitly in them. And he used all his own money to the point where it was causing him to lose money massively to actually give those books away to people. So, I don't mind talking about that.
All right, well, we will put a program together and, you know, and we will let George speak to us and you can comment on the various aspects that he addresses. How's that? Okay?
I would still also, Russell, like to do a program. I've been thinking about it a lot, about that Saving Jesus book, but putting out a program, totally teaching program, walking people through that process.
All right.
I would put together what amounts to a verbal class, if you like, to walk people through that process.
So
way that I can.
Excellent. So you do a curriculum. You do a whole curriculum, and then we will address that.
We will teach that process. Maybe a 1 hour, maybe a 2 hour show, but we will teach that process to people.
Okay, good, good. Excellent.
Because I do understand it. I'm not saying I'm proficient at it, but I understand it. And that book tells you how to, you know, you can start off with your thing about, tells us that everything he did and we can do more. So today we're going to learn how to do that.
Okay, good. Okay.
And then we will teach that class. We will make it an online class.
Excellent, 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 excellent. Listen, I need to get your email too at some point. I'm going to call you about that. But so if you want to give it to me now, good. If you want to wait and give it to me later, good. Either way.
Yeah, I'll just email it. I'll email you and then you'll have my email address.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for being on. I really appreciate it.
Russell, I enjoyed it as usual. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
I'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, appreciate the wisdom.
Exists right now and what we're creating. And it's not only the we, it's everybody else that's involved in their thought processes that is being coalesced from the creation in order to try to figure a way to come back out of this with the least destruction to the soul energy.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And the soul has to wake up and say, wait a minute, there's something above me. See, the ego keeps you back down to the me, I, and all that kind of stuff. We're all together. I love you all. We don't care. We're all one.
Indeed so. Well, thank you, George. And Jillian, thanks a lot, and I'll talk to you next time, okay?
Yes, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye now.